Now,
I
mean, the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. Our clerk will now take the roll call.
Yeah.
Councilmember Watson?
Present.
Councilmember Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Ingram?
Here.
Councilmember Mushler?
Here.
Councilmember Birch?
Here.
Councilmember Goodard?
Here. All present count for. Thank you, Council. Okay, next up is the public comment period. This is the period where members of the audience can come speak to the Council on anything that's not on tonight's agenda. We have a moratorium issue that probably some people are going to talk about. You'll get a chance to talk about that. Even if you didn't sign up, don't worry. We let anyone talk in the room. We let everybody talk. So this is anything that's not on tonight's agenda. So anyone would like to address the Council on anything that they'd like to talk about. Any takers? Any takers? Okay. Well, Papa John called it as an excuse, so we'll move on behind the public comment period.
Did he send a substitute?
No, he didn't, and I didn't ask for one.
I could FaceTime.
Actually, it was very good. I believe he called myself, Mel, Sam, and
Keith.
No, he didn't call.
Is he asking for an excuse?
Yes, he's asking for an excuse. We should put that in a minute.
Please don't.
Don't be an enabler.
Okay, Council, before you is the consent agenda.
So moved. Second.
Okay, moved by Councilperson Olson, seconded by Councilperson Goodrich. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries 7-0. Okay, next up is the capital project update.
Not unless you guys get rowdy.
Okay. Mark that down. Be nice to Katie.
She has a rock.
She should put it in her hand.
Good evening, Council. My name's Katie. I'm the Public Works Project Manager, and I've got a couple of updates. We'll start off with Church Road first. The crew up there is working on installing the concrete and block walls kind of in the Heights drive area. S&S Concrete was pouring another set of the concrete walls today. They use one of the big pumper trucks, so that's kind of interesting to see come in. They plan on prepping for curb and gutter, so that can be installed starting probably on the low end next week. Mm-hmm. We do have about 700 feet of mainline storm to install, and we've discovered that we've run into a little bit of a problem with a previously undiscovered, unlocated Puget Sound Energy line. That looks like it will be in conflict with the storm north of South Bakerview Park Drive. The contractors actually hit the line a couple of times because it was not located, which is a huge safety concern in addition to being kind of an inconvenience when it knocks out power to folks. But PSC has been really good. We met with them on site today. They've called in locates, and they will be out on Friday to do some potholing of that line so we can determine exactly where it is, where the locate lines are sprayed, and where we know the line to be, and at least a couple locations aren't exactly matching up. So we're working closely with PSC to resolve that. We're also looking at doing a little bit of a redesign on the storm so we can continue moving forward. That has somewhat delayed the installation of the storm, pushed it back about a week. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going on there. We're still pushing forward and hoping to get the asphalt down probably the first part of October. I've been talking with a contractor, too, about trying to accelerate the schedule, whether or not they can add some Saturday work to kind of speed things up. So we're looking at those options as well. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about church.
Is this weather going to hurt us at all?
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Is this weather going to hurt us at all?
It never helps, but they were able to get a full day's work in today. So I think the weather's supposed to improve towards the end of the week, and we're supposed to get upwards of, I think, like 80 degrees again. So, mm-hmm.
Katie, if there's delays for PSE's unlocated line, they're responsible for causing that?
That's my understanding of how that goes. We're working with a really good general contractor. Colacurcio has been more than accommodating to, move their crews around. They've got, at any one time, they've got 3 to 5 crews out there. So they've been finding other work, so they're not, claiming any delays at this point. So we're trying to stay out ahead so that we don't get to that point. But, yeah, that's my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else? No? Okay. Show and tell.
Next is Barrett Road. Granite's out on site. Sorry, it's raining. But what the contract entails on Barrett Road, and this is from basically a few hundred feet south of Main Street by Wiku all the way to Smith Road, it entails pulverizing the road, which basically it's a giant rototiller. So you take a asphalt that's anywhere from 4 to 10 inches deep, and they mill it up, and the resulting material is what's there in that bag. And so they started that work today. They got they completed about half of the road grinding. The rain actually is helping us on that project, because what we're doing is we're pulverizing the road. They're regrading it, and then we'll pave over the top of that. So we expect that the rest of the grinding or the pulverization will be complete probably by the end of the day tomorrow. They made really good time today. We have new sidewalk ramps to install at St. Helens Lane. That work will occur later this week. And then we're looking at probably paving the road back sometime next week, and then the following week would be raising utilities and that sort of thing. So, just as a note, we did work with the contractor, that's Granite Construction, to reduce the speed limit on Barrett. Generally, the speed limit's 35. Everybody seems to go much faster than that, but we've reduced it during construction to 25 miles an hour. And we also sent out notices to the folks in Shields Estates, as well as the business owners, so they were aware of the work going on. So I don't know if anybody has any questions about that.
What is this piece of equipment? It sounds similar to our famous thing from our past called the zipper.
It is a bigger version of the zipper.
Yeah, it's a giant zipper, basically. Yeah. They connect it to a, there's a water truck that connects to it all the time to help keep the milling portion of the machine cooled. Mm-hmm. It's actually kind of an interesting process. So if you like that kind of stuff, which I do. So.
Now, will they take that material? Sorry, got it. So, will they take that material to someplace like Whatcom Builders and recycle it?
No, we keep that material. That will actually be incorporated because there's, except we're in a couple of areas by the, we call it the Pink Hotel, but the hotel down there. And then there's some newer office buildings there. Except for in those areas where there's curb and gutter, we'll just grade out the road. They grade it out, reshape it, put a crown on it, and then they hit it with the roller and compact. And it actually binds together really well, and then we'll pave right over the top of it. Okay. So we're incorporating that old material as new road section.
Which is recycling.
Yeah. Very
cool. Thank you.
It's pretty efficient. Third on the list is actually Wendy's project, and that's the Neubauer Pond expansion. The pond expansion portion is done. Our access road for maintenance purposes is in, and we've also completed the trail along that area that kind of connects the trail in the county up towards Main Street. They have hydroseeded. I think that occurred early last week, I want to say. And the only thing that's remaining on that project, Wendy said, was the mitigation portion. They're waiting for some better weather. This weather's great. The plants like that, but it's supposed to get hot again, so they'll probably hold off until the weather's a little cooler and the plants have a better survivorship rate.
So you probably know this. I mean, that's the first time I've ever seen a pond being built where the access road is going down and then they have some rock in the bottom, but it appears the access road will be underwater.
That's actually fairly typical. Our pond, our Southwest Regional pond, is the same, because those pond, basically the pond is a it's a way to control flows that enter into the Nooksack or whatever receiving waters that you're putting this stormwater into. So the pond levels can fluctuate. So at some point, some portion of the pond level will cover the access road.
That's so you can drive your amphibious vehicle.
It's not a boat launch.
You could. We have had people drive on that trail when we first did it the first time. It was
That was disappointing. When we first did the trail, they chewed it up the very next day.
Mm-hmm.
The ecology blocks in there. We're there. It looks like, yeah, that would be a nice launch.
Yeah. Wendy's very concerned with getting the city's logo on our section of the trail to delineate from the county's.
Thank you.
Yes. She's very concerned
about
that.
It's a good-looking trail.
All right. That's all I had.
Great.
Thank you.
Any more questions? Thank you.
Nope.
Good job.
Thanks.
Are we going to talk about library quickly? Capital updates?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, the library continues. Always at the end, there's a lot of hurry to try to coordinate all of the issues. There's some small delays right now because of the concrete. The pH is too high. We think it might be from the material they used to accelerate the curing process. And the carpet manufacturers only allows a pH of, I think it's 9, and we have a pH of 10, or the other way around. It's too acidic for the glue that would normally be used. So they've fired up the hydronic heating unit in hopes of actually helping the curing process and therefore raising the pH so it'll be acceptable. If not, there's a plan B where you can actually seal the concrete and then use a different glue. So that's kind of plan B, because plan B's always cost more than plan A's, so we want to try to see if we can just... But that's holding up the... Because the carpet has to go down before the book shelves go up, and the bookshelves have to go up before the lighting systems get installed on the shelving unit. So it's kind of a domino effect, but it's going along fairly well. The civil portion, the parking lots, you've seen it. We've recoded the city hall parking lot, and we've striped, and they're putting up the ADA handicap, not ADA, but handicap parking stalls, and they'll be coming back and working on the rain gardens here a little bit later. We continue, the foundation has not ran out of money yet, so we continue to send them bills, and they continue to give us the revenue to pay them, so that's working out well, and once that's gone, then we're going to be coming to you as far as supplemental funds for that, but that should probably be in the landscaping phase. We hope to start landscaping mid-September. Initially, we were going to use the dirt that was on site, that big mound. Well, now that they've been able to actually ascertain the quantities that not only in the pile, but how much needs to go where, there's a formula. They needed to supplement the dirt because it was rather clay, so they needed to add supplement to it, some peat and some other nutrients to get it to the optimum planting profile. And initially we sent off the dirt, and they came back with a laboratory saying how much, add so much of this and so much of that per ton. Well, now that Wynnewood has actually gotten and looked at the pile and worked out the numbers, it will cost us more if we supplement on site because of the labor required to do that. They're also concerned about schlepping it all around the site. So we've worked out a deal where they're actually going to be bringing in brand new topsoil, and Starkenberg, the company that's going to be bringing in the topsoil, will take our dirt for nothing. So we're actually saving, I think, $3 or $4 a yard by doing it this way. We'll end up with a better product. They'll be able to deliver it and put it exactly where it needs to be. So that we will be blading quite a bit of that dirt to... at the south end of the, I guess it'd be the south end, yeah, the south end of the library overlooking the wetland. We're going to be grading that. So we'll be probably using about a quarter of that pile just on that grading. The rest will go away, and then we'll come back and plant. Again, they hope to do the irrigation would go in first because that's naturally under the dirt. So hopefully start that mid-September. And mid-September, if all goes well, is also when we're going to start working on our punch list. The building is not able to be occupied right now because of the carpet and the lack of shelving. But once that gets done, it'll go fairly quickly. And we'll start working on the punch list. We're still good for the October 18th opening ceremonies. We worked in a little bit of fluff in there. In a lot of ways, here probably in the next 2 weeks, the library district themselves are probably going to be spending as much time or more time than I'm spending up there, because that's when they need to populate the building and talk about moving all their stuff up from the from the old library. So there's going to be a lot of activity, a lot of in and out. The library will probably actually be open, if you will, before the 18th. That's kind of a soft opening. But they right now we're still scheduled for the 18th, and it's moving along.
Councilperson Olson?
You said something about you'll come back to us for more money. Are you talking about more money than what we've already authorized?
Yes.
If that is anticipation, is the library folks doing anything to assist you?
No. I've asked, and they did a heck of a job on fundraising for a number of years. And so I think they have expended probably their share of effort and a little more so. But we do have some residual funds from, we got our $500,000 curb grant, and there's a $50,000 holdback that the state has there. So there's a little funds actually in reserve, if you will. We're finalizing the landscaping, which is really going to be driving the eventual cost. And that's why that dirt situation worked out fairly well.
Speaking as one person, perhaps we might have to par that down some.
It's already very pared down.
It is pared down. Right now I'm working with the foundation to see just how much is left of their monies, because at the end of the project, it's always a harried time trying to get things done. And many times the solution is more money just to get things finished. So Mike Cole and I are working very hard with the architect on, we have some railing issues and we have some other issues that we're trying to chase down some lower cost alternatives. Our building inspectors have been real good about telling us, what has to be done and what should be done, and actually offering some suggestions for alternatives.
Again, as one person, we kind of like to know that before it comes with, we've already spent the money, now reimbursed.
As would I. The real pickle is some of these costs to finish are currently unknown. The big ones, we can control a lot of the costs when it comes to landscaping, but there's some issues that pop up at the end that you just have to, because of code or what have you, these things need to be
little handled. We anticipate in the budget this year. I don't know if that's going to happen.
Yeah, we'll come to you as soon as we can and try to. Thanks. We work every day to try to keep this thing in line.
Mr. Young, I think you told me sometime back that the big culprit was the soil conditions.
Yeah, predominantly. That and the soil conditions have probably added $100,000 or probably more than that to the project. We also had about $40,000 for the storm pipe that was in peril of collapsing.
So there's never a good time to break the news, but you probably have a sense as to what we're going to need in the next 3 months.
I am hoping, and I think I've mentioned this a while back, I am hoping that it's under $200,000. I was really hoping for the $100,000 range, but given the soil conditions that have haunted us from the very beginning, I've reset my sights, unfortunately.
What happened to our soil test? It wasn't quite accurate.
Well, as far as the soil amendments?
Well, I...
The initial take out of the junk out of the soil.
All right, I'm going to get you back under control, and when you raise your hand, I'll call on you, and everyone just speak out.
Yeah, it's geotesting is very, very interesting, because they go out there and they dig holes or they dig some trenches and they tell you what's where, at least from where they dug. But 2 feet away, there could be a car buried. Or in our case, we had a bridge that was buried out there with concrete and rebar and the remnants of the old bridge, as well as remnants of the old house that was out there. And most notably, the old folks in town, the guys who were here when it was all done, warned us that we'd have bad conditions, and that's why we did all the geotesting initially. But the testing looked like, as you got further closer to City Hall, it got less. The unsuitables got less. When in fact that wasn't the case at all. So it seemed like in areas that we knew it was bad, but it was bad to a greater extent, because our inspectors are such that when you start digging, you unsuitables, they just say keep digging. And you keep digging until they say, okay, you can stop now. So we had a lot of what's considered over-excavation, where we actually excavated. We thought we were going to go down 4 feet. We had to go down 8 feet or some number like that. So there was quite a bit of over-excavation for areas we knew were bad. And then there was just unsuitable soils in areas where we thought there was suitable soils. So all the way along, we just kept hitting terrible things, and so they just kept having to haul it out and bring in the good stuff. So it's kind of an art as well as a science, the geotesting.
Councilperson Hansen, then Ingram.
Was there a contingency on this project?
Not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. That's why we did that value engineering at the very beginning, where we cut out $200,000.
So when you talk about $200,000, it's $200,000. It's not coming from the holdback that
right, exactly.
we do on almost all the other projects. I had a second question. Go ahead, Paul. I can't remember what it was. Yeah.
I know that this has come up before, and we got quite a bit of pushback for the idea at the time. But if we're now running up against monetary problems, is there any interest or possibility of generating any interest to have the Dupies and some of our other civic groups that are always looking for projects doing some of the actual landscape installations?
Well, I haven't really talked to them. I know we did talk to the Friends of the Library. Many of them are avid gardeners and what have you. We talked to them more in terms of would they consider maintaining the plantings after it's all put in. There's a considerable amount of plantings that are going to go in, because there's a lot of areas to cover, not only the parking areas, but around the building itself. The advantage of having Wynnewood do it is that it comes with a plant guarantee. You know, if things go awry, they replace the plants. So it's a possibility, but I don't think we would really generate that much of a savings. Yeah, we continually try to think of the ways to penny pinch here at the end.
Councilperson Hansen?
Well, my second question had to do with all of the grants and stipends and all of that stuff. We had it coming from all different directions when we initially approved this project. Were we successful in getting all of the grants that were promised and all of the matches that were promised?
Yeah. I've not heard from the foundation that they didn't reach any of the fundraising goals that they had. And I think this makes sense. As they go along, they get a lot of pledges, and they anticipate, and in most cases it is the case, that these pledges actually turn into dollars handed to them. So during the process of fundraising, you know, they had a pledge number and then a cash number, and as the pledges went down, their cash on hand went up, and I believe they've been very good at getting all of the pledges to actually turn into true donations. And we did get the grants that we received, not only the curb grant from the state, but we also, the foundation received a $30,000 grant from, I want to say Alcoa, but it might be BP, one of the industries out at Cherry Point, specifically for landscaping. So a couple of the gifts were targeted towards certain aspects of it. They're also talking about still trying to sell some naming, where you could actually name a room or what have you. So there's a possibility for that, and I know they've not forgotten about us. We talk on a regular basis. So they've done one heck of a job, and it's not easy going out into the community and do what they do as successfully as they do.
Okay, any more questions, Councilperson Bursch?
I know you're not a contractor, but what is taking the concrete so long to dry? There's not going to be an underlying problem down the road.
No. Concrete, the Grand Coulee Dam is still drying. It's still curing. It can take literally decades for something as large as something as that. This is obviously in a much, much smaller scale. But it does take a while for these things to cure. There's a lot in the foundation. If you remember back before we actually poured the foundation, There's electrical lines in there, and there's the hydronic heating system itself, all the tubes in there that the solution goes through. And on top of that is insulation, because there's a lot of energy code for insulation. And so part of the thought is that because of all the insulation, because of all the stuff that's under the slab, that there could have been pockets of moisture that collected that just have to slowly dissipate. But we do believe now that the accelerant was responsible for the higher pH. I mean, it's cured. The concrete's cured. It's just a question now of, and believe me, I never even thought of the idea of a pH content of a concrete slab as far as what glue you use to put down carpet squares. It was something something new to me, but it's I guess it happens. We want to be sure that it's done right, because otherwise the warranty naturally isn't in place. And given our experiences up at the police station, different product, different installer, you know, we're getting new carpet up at the police station here probably in the next month or so, because the original carpet is curling. And again, different manufacturer, different installer. In fact, they discontinued that line. But because it was installed properly, the manufacturer is replacing it, and they're covering the costs of installation as well.
Councilperson Watson and Councilperson Mutchler.
What's the last possible date that you can wait before you decide you need to put the coating down so you can put the carpet?
That's probably going to be a decision for this week.
Okay.
Because
they can't put anything else up without the carpet.
Exactly. Not to belabor your point or have you kind of live in what I do, but we also had an issue. We couldn't hire up the hydronic heating because the wrong regulator was put in from PSE. You know, they put in what they thought they were supposed to put in. So that took a couple days for them to come in and put in the proper regulator. Literally, the gas wasn't flowing to the boilers. So they could fire up so the floor could get heated. So that delayed us a couple days, but that's a decision for this week.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was going to say, if we do go with the sealant and the different glue, it's about a $5,000 cost.
Is that a city? City will have to bear that cost?
Why?
Because it's
The weather was not, you know, we had to put the accelerant in the concrete to cure it in time in order to keep the contractor on the critical path, and it was weather caused. So the contractor didn't cause the freezing weather, you know, the weather gods did. So it's not their fault. We did receive the benefit, if you will, of a fully cured, more quickly cured concrete slab. And so while this is nothing that the contractor did or didn't do as far as the weather goes, the solution was to not delay the contractor, because they can actually claim delay, which they did for weather, but it would have triggered another delay on top of the delay that we are already paid for. So the decision was made months and months ago to put in that accelerant. I'm just learning about this pH issue, and I got the impression, even from the architects, that this is something that either doesn't come up very often, or it's something, because we're right on that edge of that pH of 10, pH of 9. So I think even if they were aware of the possible chemical reaction that the calcium carbonate would have with the concrete, I think they probably assumed that by now it would have dissipated down to a point where it wouldn't be a problem. And we may well be there. I mean, I wasn't able to get over there today, but I'll be over there tomorrow morning to see just what the testing. They have a pH tester over there and a moisture tester.
Those little strips.
Only that simple. Yeah. Councilperson Mutchler?
I'm just trying to get my head wrapped around what I'm hearing tonight being expressed here. I'm sort of thinking we're going to be $250,000 short. Your optimism is 200. So I'm just going to say 250 and just see if it goes higher or lower. Yeah. And we've not identified a funding source for that shortfall.
Well, Mark and I have talked about it, but
wonderful. Yeah. And I don't know. It's, you know, some of us here have built some homes. Sometimes at the end, you know, I'm not going to get that garden in this year. I'm not going to finish that shed. And do we need, as a council, to raise the issue? You know, we don't have the money to do some of these things. Maybe they don't get done this year. And I'm kind of not looking at you, Greg. I'm kind of more looking at council. I'm committed to the library. I got behind it and like to see it done. But are there some things when you say we can't do right now?
Mm-hmm.
Because we've gone through the contingency already. So kind of looking for some direction from council. Do we just keep plowing ahead? We're going to get a bill and then we find the money? Or do we find the funding source first before we go ahead with the landscaping?
I don't know how much the plants would save you because we still have to put down the soil. And the money's already been spent to put the irrigation in. So and you do it to put the soil because you can't leave the big ruts where they are. So I don't know how much just not putting plants in is going to save you.
Well, I think I think council's asked staff for, I would say by the next committee meeting, let's have a little more accurate number.
Yeah. We'll go through the
and then
possible funding sources.
Let's have Mark's plan that so by that's next Wednesday.
And along with this, if I could, are there things we could say no to or wait on, like we would all do? We've signed contracts. Maybe we have to do certain things, but are there some things we can say? You know, we could wait a year or two till we have the funds. I'd like to know what the options are, rather than just say, by golly, we need $250,000.
Yeah, at the very most, it might be a situation of delaying because I think these are things that need to be done. I think I wouldn't see us opening the library and saying, well, we'll never landscape, you know, this area over here or what have you. And again, Mark and I have worked through some of the numbers. We believe that there are some funding sources available out there to us now, so we'll be bringing that to you, and we'll be able to.
Well, let's by committee. Let's have some better information.
Yeah.
Thank you. No sense discussing. We don't have that in front of us. Okay. Next up is a public hearing on the cannabis moratorium to extend or not to extend.
That is the question.
Welcome back, Mr. Burnett.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Yori Burnett, Community Development Director. We have a public hearing scheduled tonight to consider whether or not Council wishes to extend a moratorium that was adopted back in April. Back in March. March 3rd, 2014. That was a six-month moratorium, which if the Council takes no action tonight, would expire tomorrow. The moratorium was on receiving applications for recreational marijuana. And I just want to make clear that any applicant who had applied to the Liquor Control Board prior to December 20th, 2013, for the location that they are currently wishing to move forward on, remains vested. They are not affected in any way by this moratorium. I think that there might be some folks in the audience today that have applied to the Liquor Control Board already prior to December 20th, 2013, who had wished to come into a specific location in Ferndale and might be concerned that their application is at risk as a result of this moratorium. The council's action back in March sought to preserve those applications, and that is really one of the reasons why the moratorium was put in place originally. I'll just go through a little bit of history on that because I believe, at least from staff's perspective, this is one of the reasons why the moratorium continues to be in place. Staff's understanding was that the Liquor Control Board had set a deadline of December 20th, 2013, for applying for recreational marijuana licenses in Washington State. As of December 20th, 2013, there had been one retail license applied for in the city of Ferndale, and there had been, I believe, four grow processor applications in the city of Ferndale. Our understanding was that was all that there was going to be until such time as the Liquor Control Board in the future reopened it for additional licensing. As you know, after the council adopted the regulations allowing recreational marijuana, there was an attorney general's decision that went out regarding the city's ability or inability to ban recreational marijuana. That happened after the city council had adopted changes and actually set a number of jurisdictions into a questioning mode where the attorney general's decision kind of upset the apple cart a little bit. So as a result of that, a number of jurisdictions said, well, gosh, you know, maybe we should adopt a moratorium. Maybe we should even outright ban it. That led into March of this year where the council said, well, gosh, you know, now that we know that possibly we could have done these things, and now that we now know that the Liquor Control Board is allowing folks to relocate where they wanted to be. So, for instance, someone that had applied prior to December 20th in Walla Walla could conceivably say, actually, I might want to come to the city of Ferndale. Our council decided that a moratorium was appropriate, and I'm going to read a little bit of why moratoriums can be allowed, just to remind you of why I think the council did decide to go in this direction. One of the main reasons for doing that is to, for adopting a moratorium, is to preserve the status quo, which the status quo is our land use regulation right now, allowing the recreational licensing of marijuana applications for those activities that had been applied for prior to December 20th. But when the status quo would tend to be upset by new changes or because of uncertainties, city councils are given the ability to kind of put a timeout on things until things die down or until we have the ability to create new regulations or until we have the ability to research and to determine what we can or cannot do. The city of Seattle had a temporary moratorium in place for 17 years on adult businesses. We're not proposing that the moratorium stay in place for 17 years for recreational marijuana. But we do believe that there still remain uncertainties related to recreational marijuana, uncertainties that have not yet been resolved, and uncertainties that really apply to more than just one location. It's a citywide issue. And so I'm going to read to you the findings that we are proposing. We do recommend extending the moratorium for up to 6 more months. If the council decides to go in that direction after the public hearing, there is no reason why a moratorium could not be reduced from 6 months once we have gotten all the information that we need to get. So in other words, while you would extend it for 6 months, it doesn't need to be kept in place for the entire 6 months. It's kept in place until you feel comfortable with the situation. So I'm going to read to you these findings, and I'm going to get out of the way and let other folks speak to you as well. First, findings, and this is a little bit different from what you received in your packet. The City Council held an open record public hearing on September the 2nd, 2014. That's today. Two, the notice of public hearing was duly published in the Ferndale Record and posted at City Hall and the Ferndale Public Library. Three, substantial uncertainties remain related to the number and location of recreational marijuana applicants who may apply to locate in the city of Ferndale should the moratorium be lifted. Four, the Washington State Liquor Control Board has indicated that it will not complete a review of applications before the end of 2014 and that the relocation of one or many applications to the city of Ferndale remains a possibility. Five, the Washington State Liquor Control Board has not yet provided the city with a list or description of those applications that may still be able to transfer locations per unpublished Liquor Control Board regulations allowing amendment to existing applications. Six, until the Liquor Control Board has finalized their procedures and provided the city with updates, the City Council cannot lift the moratorium without risking adverse effects on the environment or other uses. Seven, a number of legal questions have not yet been resolved and are being tested through legal challenges in other jurisdictions, including the ability for jurisdictions to ban recreational marijuana, to attach regulations in addition to state rules, and more. Eight, the city has worked to establish a higher level of communication between the Ferndale Police Department and City Hall related to recreational marijuana businesses, and 9, no modifications to the moratorium adopted in April 2014 have been made. This does not cast a wider or lesser net than what was adopted in April. So I'm happy to attempt to answer any questions that you may have. Again, I think they have to be technical in nature at this point prior to the public hearing.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Questions of staff. Councilperson Olson.
If I understand your findings that you just listed, they basically haven't answered any of your questions since the last one. Pretty much where we're at.
I think that they have confirmed some of our questions in the sense that they have a substantial backlog that they still need to go through. I at least didn't realize that they were so far behind as they apparently are.
So it's basically worse.
One could make that statement.
Well, thank you.
Councilperson Goodrich?
I have two questions. Received some documentation via email, and there were two issues that were brought up, and I don't remember which email or whatever. One had to do with, if we don't go through with this, there'd be a loss of sales tax revenue to the city. And it was my understanding that we don't get anything revenue for 5 years or something like that. Or wasn't there some issue with the city's not getting the sales tax revenue from these?
Well, I don't think of 5 years, but if
the city doesn't get the excise taxes that are through the chain, so when a grower brings it to the processor, brings it to the retailer, at each step there's a 25% excise tax. That's a state tax, goes to the state. We don't get that. Right now, Ferndale has no retail locations, so there is no sales tax to be collected. We have two processor growers. They don't impose sales taxes because they're wholesale, so we don't collect sales tax on those businesses.
So there's, by keeping the moratorium, we're not losing any money by doing it.
Property taxes?
Property taxes.
Other than that.
Impact fees, which are intended not as a profit center, but to make us whole for the review.
And then I think it was in that same email that they commented that if they didn't go through, that they would unannex their land to the city, which I guess they can do.
They cannot.
They cannot. Okay, so I was going to ask then, well, what happens to the water and sewer? Are we required to...
They don't have water.
They don't have water or sewer. The de-annexing, I'm not an attorney, but looking at that regulation, that applied to agriculture.
Are you discussing a specific proposal? Is that right now?
It was in an email that was sent out to all the council members.
Okay. Are we?
It's a technical question. Can you de-annex?
There are no lands in the city of Ferndale that have been designated agricultural. That statute appeared to me to apply only to agricultural lands. Since there are no agricultural lands designated in the city of Ferndale, I do not know how that statute would apply. And prior to starting in on the public hearing, I do believe that we have received, and I hope that you have also received from our clerk, three communications, one from Belcher Swanson, one from Duran, and one from Carpenter, I think all associated with the North Shore Corporation.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions of staff? Okay, we'll go to the public hearing portion. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience member who have signed up prior to the beginning of our meeting will be called first to speak at this public hearing. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll be given an opportunity to address the council once we've gotten through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name, address the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group or individuals support the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. You can also just stand up and say, I agree with one speaker. So, at 6:44:32, I'm going to open up the public hearing. And the first one on my list is Mr. Mark Lackey. So, welcome, Mr. Lackey.
I'm Mark Lackey. I'm an attorney that represents North Shore Corporation, who owns a piece of property that's in the city of Ferndale on Brown Road. We were the group that submitted the materials. There's three sets of materials. One was a letter by Attorney Jim Dorn, who's also associated with North Shore Corporation. That was the one that was referencing the de-annoting that you brought up. Other was by Tracy Carpenter, who's here and will be speaking as well. And the last was basically a memorandum going over some of the issues that, that our clients have and generally issues that, that we see with continuing the moratorium. The way we see this is the city of Ferndale has a great opportunity here. There is a great revenue source in recreational marijuana. The problem that exists is that opportunity may go away. These producers, processors, and retailers are all looking for locations and places to set up their businesses. These are viable businesses, business people that want to make a living and do it the right way under the rules that have been enacted, including the city of Ferndale's. The problem being is that their licenses have the ability of being revoked if they don't have a location, and they can't rely upon a jurisdiction that's under a moratorium to continue to have that as their location for being the primary source of their business if the moratorium exists. I realize there is some uncertainty out there. There is great uncertainty in all of this recreational marijuana because it is new to all of us, okay? But you have the ability with the location that my client has where they could centralize a great portion of the grow producer and processor. There was actually a case that came out this Friday in Fife. I think maybe some of you saw it in the paper where essentially they did give jurisdictions the ability to, and this was a Superior Court case, so it doesn't have a lot of authority, but it gives you some indication that they did give jurisdictions the ability to regulate and essentially say no, okay? And really what's in front of you now is the ability to say yes or no, because I think a lot of this is going to go away. I know for my clients, their investors, their potential tenants who are going to speak, all have deadlines that they need to get going, and a moratorium will make it impossible for them to do the project they want to do. As Jim Dorn's letter stated, they're even to the point where if this moratorium continues, they're going to have to consider all other options, including de-annexing their property. There is a process for doing that, as Yori mentioned. I'm not going to go into details how that works. It may or may not apply, but it's something they have to consider given the circumstances. Okay. Well, I thank you for your time, and like I said, some of the others are going to present as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blackie. So it's Tracy Carpenter. Welcome.
Hi, and thank you for letting me present some information to you today. I'm a commercial real estate agent. I've been working primarily in Whatcom County since 2005. I work both on both sides of this issue. I've worked with buyers in Whatcom County. I've worked with tenants and landlords on both sides. So I've spent a lot of time trying to address all the issues that come up. To be honest, I was really surprised the quality of people that I'm dealing with. They're family people. They're highly educated people. They're people who want to be like really good community partners. They're well-spoken. They know their numbers. They know their exposure. They know the risks that they're getting into. They want to come to Ferndale. They want to thrive in Ferndale. And I can say in regards to this particular project that Mark just spoke about, when I present that project as an option for them to come, to Whatcom County, the reason they want to come to Ferndale for that project as opposed to something else is that it offers them something they can't get other places. The idea of being in a group complex, the idea of getting some of their costs mitigated through amortization of their costs by investors who are willing to risk that of their own money, they can't just, that's unusual in the state. There are two other projects in the state that I'm aware of that are similar. They're all south of Seattle. These tenants are highly aware of security. They want for themselves and for their product to do that piece very, very well. They're willing to spend upwards of $80,000 to $250,000 on security systems, which is also mandated by the state. It's highly, you know, they're told they have to do a certain level. I want to address just real quickly the part about the money, because I think money talks, right? We've been talking, you guys have been talking a lot about money tonight. There are, to me, direct benefits that come to the city when thinking about this industry. Not only living wages, these people are paying upwards of $15 to $20 an hour for their key personnel, for the people that are coming in for harvest. Permitting fees, impact fees, which Yuri had actually kind of mentioned. I've got investors that are willing to bring services to this particular project. They're willing, you know, and it makes sense financially at what they can charge this type of industry on rent to actually pencil out to bring services. Something that I don't think is going to happen otherwise. Some other ideas that I think you could consider. Thank you.
I'll let them tell you.
Okay, so we'll wait for that. Mr. Tyrone Wagner, welcome, sir.
Hello, thank you. I represent a Tier 3 operator. We've applied. I'd like to say first off that most of the moratoriums were already in effect last summer. I know this because I was searching commercial property all over Western Washington. It was only after the AG's comments. It was not at that time. The moratorium started falling off once the Liquor Control Board's rules and regulations came out, and they were so strict, I think a lot of municipalities got a lot more comfortable with having people like us in their areas. Regarding Ferndale becoming a potential mecca for businesses like this, so far 183 licenses for producers have been issued. During that time, 37 were canceled in that process, which is 20% of the applicants. Okay, out of 135 that were cross-referenced as applying versus currently licensed, only 17% have moved, of which almost all of them, all except for two, moved within 20 miles. And almost always the case was that their original address was in Kent, Linwood, Arlington, Chehalis, and Sunnyside. Regarding security, we already have the strict Washington State rules and regulations. Every inch of the entire facility, canopy, hallways, offices, exterior of the building, entry and exit points, will have proximity alarms, pressure sensors, and door alarms. We have to store 45 days of video, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, of every inch of our facility on 1.3 megapixel, 10 frames per second cameras. We plan on having a staggered production, so we will be pulling products slowly, weekly, so we will never have large amounts of inventory or product. We will have delivery vehicles leaving once or twice every single day. Our plan is to have 30 employees at full capacity, most making $40,000 a year with benefits, floor supervisors $60,000 a year with benefits, a full-time security operator on salary, and also a full-time 502 compliance officer. And I'm finished.
Any questions for this guest? Seeing none?
Okay, thank you.
So, Trevor Wagner, welcome.
Thank you.
Address, if you can.
Hi, I'm Trevor Wagner. I actually am the original applicant for 20 Plus LLC. It's a Tier 3 application. And pretty much the reason why we started looking into working with this group is because they actually work with investors that are willing to do build-outs for the tenant improvements for the buildings, which we find to be very important in our industry because a lot of the other applicants that have gotten into the business have just gone in on a shoestring type budget, and we can see them that they will fail. Or there's a greater possibility of them not doing well within the first year or 2 years of business. We see this as being very important that the builder would actually be able to help us out with the infrastructure because it raises the odds of having long-term success, which creates jobs in the community, which will also, as you probably all know, that has a trickling down effect to the restaurants and rents that are paid. We really like to take the opportunity to work here inside this facility, not just because it would be affordable in TIs, but also because we'd be working together with other tenants inside the facility. So we see a strength in numbers where we can actually share information, work with each other. It'll help strengthen the security. It'll be less likely that anybody would actually have the audacity to try to break in or plan a robbery when there's, you know, a few of us, not just one applicant or, excuse me, licensee sitting on a property all by himself. I think single licensees in their single property pose a greater risk than an actual complex with many tenants inside of it. We'd be very excited and pleased to start business here in Ferndale, and I really hope that you consider this a opportunity for us. And
stay right there, Brad. We have one question for you, Councilperson Watson.
I'm just curious. We got the memo, and it said something about hiring scientists and professionals. I'm just curious, what would you be doing with scientists?
That would have been another group. That wouldn't be affiliated to my group.
Okay.
I'm actually out of King County, I manage several medical marijuana collective gardens down there.
Okay. So and this is still part of the Tier 3 that that Tyrone talked about? Are you the same Tier 3?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so but we do plan on having a research area in our facility.
Okay.
And that would be for crossbreeding and finding out, pretty much testing products to do better overhead efficiencies.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Councilperson Mutchler?
When I have a chance, I'd like to ask a question of the North Shore people, but I don't think he is part of North Shore.
Okay.
Okay.
Any more questions for this guest? Okay. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks for your time.
So I'm done with my list, but we still have opened up to anyone in the audience. So would anyone like else to come forward? Anyone from, would you like to bring North Shore up?
Manuel would like to speak.
No. One. Okay. We'll have a guest then. Name and address. Welcome, sir.
Manuel Reta, 2432 Bellevue Drive. I am for a moratorium. Okay, from my experience as a local taxpayer, as a local veteran, as some of you might be or have been, whatever, I am concerned for our children. These are good business people, but I'm also concerned about the people who don't do it in a business-like manner. And there's always a chance that they're coming in through little cracks and affecting our children. It would also affect the law enforcement as far as I'm concerned. Law enforcement, we have the best that I believe in the county, and I want to keep it that way. But we do not want to burden our law enforcement any more than they are already. They're doing an excellent job, and I support them. I would also speak for the kids, too. You go out in the schools, high schools, you see them out there smoking little cigarettes. Okay? It could very well be pot. Okay? Very simple. Control. If we cannot control the high school kids smoking outside or close to the high schools, how can we actually support or actually have a handle, good handle on them doing things which are not legal? Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else wish to come forward for the audience? So we had a question of one of the producers. Can someone, Mark, do you want to handle that?
Sure.
And I can't remember which memo it was, but it our city of Ferndale has 8 commercial zones.
Right. And so for the record, we have Mark Lackey back the microphone.
Yeah. And all of them are open to 502 businesses. One of them is the city center, and it's too close to schools, but basically 8. And in one of the memos talked about, if I read it a couple of times, it seemed to me that the company was advocating the city changed zoning to limit 502 businesses to light manufacturing and light industrial and manufacturing.
Yeah.
Was the point that just to have, what was, I didn't understand the reason for that.
The point being is, just like you said, some of those other zoned regions are
are really inappropriate areas, but the light industrial and manufacturing, which is the location of North Shore's property, is more outlier, and it's going to give you less problems that people are concerned with. They're outside, further fringe, more fringe properties is what I'm getting at, and so you aren't going to have the issues of them being in the downtown center or the core. They're going to be, isn't that correct?
But regardless of whether the city were to do that, that's a zoning question.
Right, yes, yeah.
That wouldn't impact you at all in any way.
If you did a moratorium only on, say, general commercial and those other ones, and you lifted it for small, for light industrial industrial manufacturing.
So you're suggesting that the city may have hesitations about these other areas.
Exactly.
But it shouldn't have hesitation about light industrial manufacturing.
That was the point.
Okay.
Yeah.
That clarifies that for me.
Thank you, Mr. Lackey.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Yeah. Councilperson Watson?
And the memo also talked about living wage jobs for scientists and professionals. It seems like you mostly have growers who are just kind of looking at making a better plant, necessarily.
Yeah. I think actually Tracy's better at answering that question, to be honest with you. So I'm going to let her come up and answer that one.
Sure. Okay, we're going to pull Mark away, and we're going to bring Tracy Carpenter back.
Okay. So in that memo the letter that I sent you, I tried to describe kind of a range of growers. So you have different examples of growers, people that I'm talking to. The one that I'm talking to is the one that I referenced is a company out of Canada that's doing research and development, and they are interested in 60,000 square feet of space, of which a portion of that would be grow production under the I-502 regulations, and about 12 to 13,000 square feet of research and development. They're a nutraceutical company, so they're primarily producing product that's non-controlled substance. So it's everything that the cannabis plant could be turned into outside of the THC, which is the psychotropic, the active element. So that's a company that's actually existing in Canada. They want to come down and move some of their operations into the U.S. for those purposes.
Can they do that sort of research in Canada? I mean, can they do marijuana research in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're existing. They're an existing business.
But have they actually done marijuana research to this?
I don't know that much about. I don't know quite, because I don't represent them.
So, I was just wondering if the legalization made it easier to now do research on the marijuana. Can you do research in states where it's not legal? I don't know.
I don't know the answer. It's a good question. Yeah, I can't answer that.
Okay.
Any other questions for this guest? Okay.
I did have one more, just an example, if you're interested.
Yes, please.
I do have another interest of, a Tier 3, so up to 30,000 square feet, of a group that their background is actually all ag-based. They're 25 years working with agriculture and bringing products to market and going through a startup and a stabilization market. They understand what happens to with new product like this and what happens to the markets. They're they're highly educated, and one of their partners is worked for NASA. I mean, it's just really. The kinds of people are so vast, but that's somebody that I've spoken with, and they come really, they understand it maybe at a different level than what you would even imagine that they can understand that. So,
just for the record, not everybody NASA likes to get high. I'm just want to clarify.
Yeah, I think most.
Glad you put that on the record.
Yeah.
How many years at NASA, Kathy?
I used to work for NASA.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh well, yeah. So then you. Any other questions?
We're okay.
Thank you.
All right. Anyone else from the audience? We're okay. Anyone can speak?
What I did in my spare time.
Anyone? Anyone? Mm-hmm. Anyone? No?
Can
you
add?
No.
No. Unless we have a question.
No. Okay. So at 7:04:06, I'm closing the public hearing. Now, council, it's up to you to discuss and make a decision.
Quick. Go ahead.
To be clear, council, you're... if you're going to make a motion that would be relevant to this, you need to make sure that it's as modified by staff with these findings of facts as read by the community developer.
Yeah.
Okay. First hand up was Councilperson Mutchler, then Watson, then Goodrich.
So, Councilor Mutchler, it's your floor.
Thank you. While Mr. Lackey's response is kind of fresh in my mind, does that satisfy some of our concerns if we lifted the moratorium in those narrowly defined zones?
I think that's council's right to answer that question rather than staff. From my perspective, you've heard from a number of applicants who had not applied prior to December 20th. You've heard from these folks. I don't know how many other folks or if there are any other folks that might be interested in moving into zones, either the ones remaining if you were to modify the area or not. But the uncertainties that existed, staff has never argued that recreational marijuana businesses or business people are bad or are not good business people. I think what we've heard tonight is that they are, at least these folks are good business people. I have not heard myself anything that would change staff's recommendation.
So it just seems to me, in my simple way of looking at it, there's sort of two extremes. There's the Fife position, if we may, which was not embraced by this council. And then there might be the far end of we don't care how many 502 businesses are in Ferndale anymore than we care how many latte stands. It's a neutral issue. That might perhaps be a position. But since the Fife news and the Attorney General, it seems at least to open up sort of that middle somewhere that I honestly don't know where council stands. And so it seems like we need some certainty. We always talk about certainty on council. We want developers to have certainty. We don't know what will stand or what won't stand. We just don't know. And we need some finality and some decisions here by our state.
From our perspective, what we would ask from you is what information would provide you certainty? Because our goal as staff is moratoriums are no way to run a city. Moratoriums are supposed to be temporary. So
I know what it would be for me. Because when we passed our ordinance, robust conversations, we were motivated, I think, maybe in small part, but I think in large part, to avoid litigation. I kept hearing we need to do this in this way, to this extent, because we could be taken to court. And I don't know if that's the reason all the council voted the way they did, but that was sort of the argument or part of the argument. We're not quite so sure if that is the case. And so I simply want to know what we can or can't do, kind of square one sort of thing. We talked about, like I said before, we allow this in all 8 of our zonings. It's been suggested by our guests and maybe by some of us on council that maybe we should limit it to certain zones. We just don't know if we can do that or not. We're still not sure whether we can do that. I'd like to know. So there's uncertainty in terms of how we can zone this thing. Still uncertainty.
Just to clarify real quick.
Sure.
I was just pulling up the zoning. Recreational marijuana production is permitted in the city's general business, light industrial, and manufacturing zones. Processing also is general business, light industrial, and manufacturing. So 3 zones.
Retail would be possible.
And that has retail changed. Would include city's regional retail, gateway development, mixed use.
And I was umbrella 502 businesses. Yeah.
And retail we're still one license only.
And we have received a site plan from that retail license, and they're going to TRC.
Locked into that one. That hasn't changed yet. Okay, I have councilperson Watson, Goodrich, Ingram, and then Hansen.
Two questions, I guess. Even if council wanted to make changes, we can't change the ordinance. You have to go through a whole process, correct? You have to go through the planning commission and this is a long process. We can't just tell them tonight we're going to do things.
To change the zoning, you would need to go through the planning commission.
And do a zoning amendment.
Do a zoning amendment.
So it's not a short process if we want to change. And we don't know yet if we... initially we were told you had to do what the state said. You had to have it a certain way. So even if we did want to make changes, I mean, that's why we did it initially. We did what the state said we needed to do. And now we'd have to go back and do the planning commission and go through the whole process again, even to make some changes, minor changes, I believe.
Correct. Because the only thing before you tonight is to extend or not to extend.
That's correct. Yeah.
We part of the reason why staff is proposing to continue this is that while there has been one court case at the Superior Court level, none of this is in any way finalized.
Wasn't that just a county Superior Court?
Correct.
Okay.
And so now we're talking Court of Appeals and potentially Supreme Court. Oh. So.
And as part of that decision, it said this decision might have been different in a different context, you know, in a different jurisdiction. So,
I do have one more. So, what is your worst case scenario if we lifted the moratorium? What's the worst that could happen?
The worst case scenario is that, and some might argue that it's not a worst case scenario. The city would likely receive applications for these businesses, and they would start the process of review. Possibly not all of the applications that we receive would be able to be permitted, or the applicants would choose to incur those expenses or that time. I guess the absolute worst case scenario is that you see in a relatively public area a row of recreational marijuana grow and processors.
100 or 3? I mean, there's no way of knowing, is there?
There really isn't any way of knowing.
Okay.
No. Probably in between those numbers.
You should do that.
Yes.
Were you working on the library project?
I was in Disney World.
It doesn't sound like we want him to. Councilperson Ingram is next. Or, excuse me. I was out of order. Councilperson Goodrich is next. I'm sorry.
My comment was on a question on this that was handed out here on your findings of fact, Section 5. When you read it, you said September 9th the council held a public. But on this, my copy, it says August 18th.
He said September 2nd, which is tonight.
September 2nd.
Yeah. So what's your...
It's September 2nd. This was prepared in anticipation of us having held a public hearing 2 weeks ago. And then I was not able to...
So if we adopt this, we have to adopt it with that date?
As what I read...
The September 2nd.
Yes.
Okay.
Adjusting the date.
Okay.
Is that it?
I just wanted to make sure that we were looking at the same documents here.
Okay. Councilperson Ingram?
Well, I've got a couple of things. If I'm hearing the presenters correctly, I keep hearing these joint operations. I keep hearing this thing about more than one licensee. Did they change the law? Because when I read the original 502, it said processing cannot be co-joined with growing. They had to be separate, and they had to be separated by a certain distance.
That was the retail sales. That you can do grow and processing together, but you not cannot also grow and be retail.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, my question here, too, is this. Are these gentlemen behind you already licensed? Are they not grandfathered in?
They did not apply to the city of Ferndale.
Did they apply to the state?
Did they apply to the state prior to December 20th?
Yes, but the moratorium is specific to those businesses that the people that are vested are those that applied to the state in December 2013 by the original deadline and have not attempted to modify their address in any way. So the intent of the moratorium is to bar those businesses that are trying to come into Ferndale from other areas. Typically what we saw in the past was those businesses trying to come from where there's already another moratorium in place or a ban in place. So they did not, if they had applied to Ferndale and to the state by December 20th, then they had vested themselves, and we have two locations that are in. And I've signed their business licenses.
And none of these are either then?
Correct.
Okay. Councilperson Hansen?
I want to correct one thing John mentioned, and again, it's the oldness in me. I can't remember exactly what, but the reason we established the moratorium, Sam just alluded to it just now, had nothing to do with the fear of having too much or that sort of thing. It was strictly, we thought, we set up our rules, we went through all of the process of where it could happen, where it couldn't happen. The state had a deadline of December 20th. And we essentially were accepting anyone that applied to the state up through December 20th. We put the moratorium on because all of a sudden the AGs came out with a statement that said, if you are a grower, processor, or a retailer in an area that has a ban or a moratorium, you can move that to any jurisdiction that doesn't.
Clarification, the Liquor Control Board.
Liquor Control Board, all right. And so we said, wait, ooh, let's take a step back. Let's put a moratorium on in order to prevent that deluge that we might see. And unfortunately, I'm looking at this particular operation and saying, if we needed to have an additional operation, that's the one we probably should have. From what I'm seeing on the surface, I'd like to know a lot more underneath about who these people are and so forth. But the moratorium is strictly, was placed in place strictly to keep people from jumping from jurisdiction. And now, all of the uncertainty created by the Fife case and the Attorney General seemingly being on both sides of the issue at the same time. He argued for the state in the Fife case that it ought to be wide open, there shouldn't be any bans, and lost. Yet he gave an opinion that you ought to be able to put a ban in. We've got a lot of uncertainty out there. They've acknowledged the uncertainty. As far as I'm concerned, I'm going to give it another 6 months to see if it sorts out.
Plus, is that a motion for this?
Sure.
You wish.
I'll move. We accept the ordinance as presented by staff with the one correction of that we held the public record hearing on September 2nd.
Second.
August 18th.
Okay, it's been moved and second. Further discussion by Councilperson Watson.
Quick question for staff. As long as we have a moratorium, can people apply to the state using a Ferndale address?
We don't control that, so yes, they could. Then should the city remove its moratorium, and if they happen to be in the queue, then we would process them.
But they still would have to be putting forward a lot of money, not knowing what we were going to do 6 months from now.
There is a risk to them, certainly.
Okay.
Councilperson Bursch.
Is it correct we can lift the moratorium any time for the six-month period?
Yes, and that is something that we would need direction from council as to what it would take to lift it. Since these are temporary actions, is it waiting it out until the inventory of the backlog for Liquor Control Board has been exhausted? Is that the certainty that we'd get? Is it a subsequent court decision? And possibly we won't know that tonight. But it is something that we will need to know so we can be working on something. If there were to be a magic bullet, that if only it was this, if you can give us those unanswered questions that you need answered, then we can certainly start working on it.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Ingram.
So going back to 502, and I'm just wondering here, and December 20th was the deadline for application for licenses, correct? 502 did not limit the number of processor growers in a community.
Correct.
It, retail was limited by 502 or by the Liquor Control Board or both?
At least the Liquor Control Board.
Told the Liquor Control Board to write the rules, but the Liquor Control Board wrote the rules limiting it.
Sure. Sure. So what I'm wondering about is prior to December 20th when they stopped the applications, we could have had a deluge of, because we passed ours in November.
Mm-hmm.
It's been there. So there could have been 20, 100, but we weren't concerned about that happening back then, or did we just sort of figure the odds are it wasn't going to happen?
We thought that, absent a moratorium, that if jurisdictions cannot adopt a moratorium, that each jurisdiction would tend to get around its market share. Maybe some would have more because you're closer to a college, perhaps, or closer to the Canadian border, but you would tend to get approximately your market share. with the possibility of there being moratoriums, it created the possibility of orphans looking for what is a friendly jurisdiction that has adopted 502 compliant language that happens to also maybe be in a beneficial market area. Ferndale happened to be, from our perspective, at least kind of the center point of where that could be. Gosh, we're close to the Canadian market. We're close to the third largest university in Washington State, and we have code-compliant language. Plus, at that time, we had some moratoriums around us. So we saw that there was a potential. Now, the moratoriums around us have gone away, but I think as evidenced by the folks speaking tonight, Ferndale is still a possibility for some folks that might have been orphaned or would have gone elsewhere if not for other moratoriums or if not for our general positive outlook.
Yeah, so it seems to me there are still legal questions that are not settled yet, but it seems as if maybe a philosophical question about Ferndale that maybe we would want a row of this. Maybe this is healthy for us. Maybe we're going to adopt the B&O tax next month and then all's good. I mean, there's that scenario too, or maybe we're kind of comfortable with this much, but that much. And that's a no, council maybe. Discussion. That's
yeah,
what we're done.
Clerk wants to respond, rather.
His head's going to pop off.
Yeah, he's
let me respond in that case.
Let him suffer.
Well, I think what our message has been the whole time, and this is very important, is that we were very confident and comfortable with what the state had adopted for the rules and regulations. The state still regulates most of this process. We thought that the lines of communications were very impressive with the state of Washington. We sat through a webinar hosted by the Association of Washington Cities about this process. It all seemed very clear. We felt pretty good about how many people were coming in because we saw who was applying. The state did a very good job of frequently putting out a new list, updated list of who was applying to them. So regardless of them coming to us, we still saw who was coming down the pipeline. We saw those Ferndale addresses. We were looking at them on maps. We could see which ones had our zip code and were in the city limits. And then what occurred was all of a sudden we started hearing not from the state, but from folks who were interested in these businesses that, hey, you know, I know I was in this area, but dear Ferndale, we're thinking about coming to you because the state's going to let us. And we're like, no, that can't be true. And so we contacted the state, and they kind of half-heartedly admitted to us that that was occurring. We mentioned that to some media, and the media called, and the state said, we have no idea what you're talking about. So there's been a very mixed message here, and that has been one of our biggest concerns, is that we need some clarification, and we want to, I guess, re-energize that good line of communication with the state. That's, I think, a really big goal of this. So the reason why I think we were comfortable before with who was coming in, not the delusion, was we saw who was coming. The story was there in the applicants and all that, and the state, we felt, was pretty clear. Since then, we know who all the applicants are statewide. Because the state has kind of quietly made this change, we don't know where they're going to end up. And there's something like 2,600 applicants or something like that. So there's still more to learn.
Thank you. Okay, I have Councilperson Ingram, who's been very patient. Right after him, Councilperson Goodrich.
Yuri, I want to address something that was said earlier that I think either I misheard it or it was explained incorrectly. Can we, no matter what the outcome tonight is, but can we modify the moratorium to be covered in only those two light industrial manufacturing zones? I got the impression that you thought that we were talking about changing zoning. Well, I think the intent was not to change any zoning, but just remove that one from the list.
Since I'm not an attorney, I would prefer that I be able to speak to our attorney. Now, recognizing that if you take no action, the moratorium would expire tonight, my recommendation for that would be to extend the moratorium. We would get that answer and we could bring it to you, and then you could decide whether or not that resolves things for you if we can do that, but you would still have the cover of the moratorium to protect the city until that answer is provided.
But why would it be difficult to simply change the ordinance to not include one zone?
Part of our findings of fact says that we're not making any modifications to the moratorium.
Okay.
That came from our attorney.
All right.
Yeah, and I'd add, moratoriums are land use regulations. That's what they're considered because they really do have the effect. of allowing or disallowing uses. And so I think that we would be bound, since this is a land use regulation, we would be bound to go through the normal zoning modification process, which involves the Planning Commission.
Councilperson Goodrich?
It was my memory on this, the moratorium, was one of the issues was these orphans that were out there. When we did the original ordinance and things, we knew, like Sam said, we knew what was coming. We had one retailer and I think it was three grower processors. And then all of a sudden we were told that we could get inundated with them. My question to you is, as kind of a thing for down the road, looking at how to take this off, can we limit the number of grower processors in our city? To say, okay, we're going to limit it to five or whatever, so that, you know, we don't become the Walmart of marijuana processors here or something, where we have, you know, hundreds of thousands of square feet of that, or is that even a possible? Because that was one of the concerns, was that all these people all of a sudden would flood into Ferndale.
Mm-hmm. I talked to the city attorney about this today, and she recommended that we don't go in that direction for a couple of reasons. That is a question that I'm sure is going to be answered by another jurisdiction's court case. How do you measure it? Do you measure it based on the acreage that they're using, by the number of plants that they have, which is already regulated by the state, by the amount of grow space that they use, which is going to vary depending on the method of growing it? There are a lot of different loopholes where you might be focusing on one thing and someone might be able to find an end around. I would agree with the city attorney not to go in that direction, at least in this case. And again, you know, Fife isn't the only one that's out there. And that is one of the basic questions. Can we limit it? We're good at this point. I would much rather someone else get hit on the head and then we follow behind them and not make the mistake.
Yeah, I was just wondering if it was even a possibility of a thing to look at. I don't know if it would fall under the same guidelines as taco stands. You know, can you limit the number of taco stands in the city or something? I don't know if we can do that. I remember one time before we were talking, we can regulate the box, but we can't regulate what's in the box. Mm-hmm. I was just wondering if this fell under that same type of idea.
Well, and that will certainly be a question that I continue to research. And
that would be one of my comfort things as far as the moratorium.
Okay.
You know, is that a possibility or not?
Okay. And that one would certainly have to go through, if we could, the full process. And since a lot of these ideas, and it's good that you're giving direction because I did ask for it, invite a whole much more lengthier discussion, mm-hmm. It's another reason for keeping that moratorium in place until we can have had that discussion.
Okay. Remember, there is a motion on the floor. Councilperson Watson.
I will actually speak to the motion.
Okay.
I'm not going to support the motion. I would like to see this initiative succeed, and my concern is that it's going to fail because of NIMBY, basically. We're okay with there being legal marijuana, just not here. I would really like to see legal marijuana in the state. I don't want to have people going to prison for marijuana, and I also would like to be able to see us do something with the medical marijuana. I think we're going to do a lot more research with the legal marijuana than we've been able to in the past. There's a lot of anecdotal evidence of what marijuana can do without the THC, medicinally. And I would like to see that research carry on. And I know we're nervous. I'm nervous, too. The new processor is a little too close to residential for me. But I think we need to move forward. I know it's hard. I mean, it's the first time we've ever done this. So I understand people are nervous. So I won't be supporting the motion.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. The motion is before you. Let's do a roll call vote so there's no confusion.
Read again the motion for me.
The motion is to approve the ordinance as presented this evening by staff, and including the correction of September 2nd regarding when the hearing was held.
Thank you.
On the motion, Councilmember Watson?
No.
Councilmember Hansen?
Yes.
Councilmember Olson?
Yes.
Councilmember Ingram?
Yes.
Councilmember Mutchler?
Yes.
Councilmember Birch?
Yes.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Yes. Okay, the moratorium is still in effect until further notice as you change it. Okay.
Thank you, Council.
Well, the motion was 6-1 in favor. All right, moving on to our discussion of fireworks regulations. Council, who wants to tackle this one?
As briefly as possible, staff is seeking direction from the council as to what you would like to do with fireworks regulations. There appears to have been indication from committee that there is not interest in a full ban, but perhaps restriction to July 4th. As a note, if we provide any restriction from what we're doing now, state law says it will not take effect from a year and after we adopt it. So anything we do now, regardless, if we do something, will not take effect for July 4th, 2015. It would happen after that.
First up was Councilperson Goodrich. After talking to several people and on both sides of the fence on this, including some clerks at Higgins, as I was checking out to know that I'm a council member. I think I would feel comfortable with just limiting it to the 4th of July. I know from an animal perspective, I have a dog that hates fireworks, but I know at least I can do a couple of different things with him. I can give him a doggy treat that calms him down. I have his thunder coat that I can put on him, and those seem to work really well.
Give him some real one.
My biggest problem with my dog is thunder, period. Because I have no idea when that's going to happen. And by the time the first clap of thunder comes, that's it. You can't give him the calming pill. You can't put the thunder coat doesn't do anything for him and stuff. At least with the 4th of July, we can take some proactive steps like we did this year where we just left the area. I think we should just limit it to the 4th.
I should clarify too, Council. I forgot to mention that what staff is seeking from you is a motion to provide direction. So we would welcome a motion to provide direction.
I would like to make the motion then that we limit fireworks to just the 4th of July.
We have a second while we continue discussing.
Second.
Okay, so we're going to go down the line. Councilperson Birch.
Well, I would like to include New Year's Eve, though.
Oh, I thought that was part of the... Oh, I'm sorry.
So you'd add an amendment to his that it'd be I would include July New Year's Eve.
I would include New Year's Eve. I thought we were just talking about the 4th of July.
Is there any objection to that amendment?
No.
Okay. Okay, continue on the circle. We'll just go around the circle in order here. Councilperson Mutchler.
I'd have a hard time banning it. I believe that for a lot of citizens... like myself, most of us, symbolisms are important. Sacraments in our religious realm, those types of things are meaningful. The chief said something one day that sometimes these things are done so much they don't mean much anymore. I understand that they get to be rote, and those of us in the sacrament business have to find ways to keep them meaningful and interesting. I think the fact of moving this to one day could have the benefit of making it more special. When you're just doing this every day, it's noise. If it's limited to a day that should be special to us as Americans, maybe there'd be a little more reflection on it. So I appreciate the motion, and I plan to support it.
Councilperson Ingram.
Well, I haven't bought fireworks in a long time. I can't remember when the last time we bought fireworks was, but when we had the two boys at home, we bought them all the time. And it was a very special evening. And I think it's very important to keep that tradition alive. And I also think that tradition can be kept alive on the 4th of July.
Okay. Councilperson Olson?
I will not support this at all. I don't think I've gotten anything... more correspondence than anything in 6 or 7 years than this. And that's amazing to me. But everything, and most of what we had that came in and spoke to us, including firemen, were all for it. But yet we had a few come in and complain about what happens with their neurotic dogs. Nobody ever mentioned kids. But that seems to be a driving force behind this. And the one thing that, really got me in one of the letters or emails was not everybody can celebrate the 4th and the 4th because it doesn't get dark till 10 o'clock. And if it falls in the middle of the week, then it's kind of hard to stay up that late if you're a working person and set off things with your kids. And they put it off to the weekend. That's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to look at this. And I guess that's probably why the state has such a broad area, is that there's some day in there that's going to be a weekend that families can do it together and not have to worry about getting up the next day. So I won't support it.
Councilperson Hansen.
I came in, I'm going to support the motion for the single day. I'm not happy about it. I think it should be a full ban. And I'll tell you why I think it should be a full ban. Because all of the rhetoric that I've heard has to do with my right. Well, what about mine for peace and quiet? What about my right to not have the neighbor try and burn my house down? Unfortunately, we have fireworks. I played with fireworks when I was a kid. So my dad would have killed me if I got anywhere close to the hay barn, you know. But what's happening is that all of a sudden we have this free-for-all with fireworks on the 4th of July, and 75 to 90% of those people are not celebrating the reason for the Independence Day. They're firing off a bunch of stuff to see it go bang and boom. And they're not using good neighborly tactics by making sure that they're not disturbing their neighbors. My pet just lays there and goes, "What was that?" And he doesn't care. But I've had pets that would go berserk. I'm not nearly as concerned. I'm concerned about the pets, but I'm not nearly as concerned as I am. How about the people that don't want to be inconvenienced by the neighbor? We certainly wouldn't let people trespass on your land willy-nilly just because it's something to celebrate on a different kind of day. You know, if we had a tradition for Columbus Day that everybody could go rip off siding off somebody else's house, we wouldn't support that. By permitting fireworks, we are saying, sure, it's okay to fire a bottle rocket over to the neighbors and set the roof on fire. We're not directly saying that. I understand that. We're not condoning that. But we are condoning the use of it. And all of the folks that don't want that to happen have rights to. I will support the one day, 4th of July.
Councilperson Watson.
I will also reluctantly support it. I would like to see a ban as well. The police department has made it clear that it's difficult for them to tell illegal from legal. And I know that a lot of the real problems are with the illegal stuff because it just goes so far. You shoot it and you don't know where it's going to go. So I will reluctantly support this. And as for 4th of July coming on a Wednesday, you know, in keeping with the Christmas tree thing, Christmas comes on a Wednesday too every now and then, and we still find time to open our gifts. So I think even if it comes on 4th of July comes on a Wednesday, people will have plenty of time to blow up stuff over my house.
Councilperson Nutzler? So the motion is 2 days or 1 day?
It is 4th of July and New Year's Eve, and you've approved that, so it would be effective 2016.
Point
2016 for 4th of July, 2020. 17 for New Year's.
I assume New Year's Eve.
December. It would be December 2015. It would take effect for that, and it would be July 2016.
It's besides the point on the exact date, sir. I'm in favor of the 1 day. I'm not in favor of the 2, but I will take the 2 to keep the 1. So I didn't feel like that had been aired out about doing New Year's Eve.
Question though, we didn't actually pick a time. We've had times in the original. So are we talking about 12:01 on July 4th?
July 4th is a 24-hour day.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's usually.
I don't even get much more specific.
It's usually 9 a.m. to 1 a.m. the next day, I believe.
So I would like to amend the motion to set up a time for beginning at 9 a.m. on July 4th until 1 a.m. on July 5th.
Midnight.
Thank you.
Midnight. I'm afraid you wouldn't July 4th to midnight.
Okay.
Good. I'll second that amendment.
Okay. General agreement on the amendment?
Before we vet that, what time frame on the 31st?
I think it's already in code, isn't it?
But we're changing it, so we'd have to.
6 p.m. to midnight.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. So that same, the amendment would be, same premise, so be 9 a.m. to midnight on July 4th.
Just to clarify, generally, the New Year's Eve regulations typically go to 1 a.m. on New Year's because people start lighting them off at 12. At 12, the ball drops, and then people are like, ah, let's light some stuff on fire. So
I apologize, we're doing the amendment this way.
1 a.m.
Yes, typically it would be something like that. It would be until like 1 a.m. the next day so people can celebrate, and then by then they're passed out.
Midnight to 1
a.m. You're not excused. 6
p.m.
Fine.
Okay. Is 6 p.m.
okay?
6 p.m. Okay,
now,
you
can move a second. We don't have to vote on the amendment, do we?
See no,
yeah, so I see no objection on the amendment, so we're going to vote on the central issue.
Chief has a comment.
There's a motion on the floor, but they have just added to that motion. You have to see if there's objection to adding that additional language.
Is there any objection to adding the New Year's language?
Seeing none. Now, we're voting on the amendment. We're not voting on the original motion. We haven't gotten there yet.
Okay.
They did not, by unanimous consent, adopt that amendment.
Yes. Okay. We have to actually vote.
Are we allowing the chief to speak at this time?
Absolutely.
I think by general consent, we'd like the chief to speak.
As far as the hours, would it be advisable that the motion said that fireworks would be allowed in the city of Ferndale on the 4th of July and in the 1st in accordance with the hours specified in the RCW, so that we are complying with the RCW? And they specify specifically the hours.
For those 2 days, for July 4th and New Year's, sir?
To be clear, I apologize. July 4th currently is until midnight for us. I had the 1 a.m. is our New Year's. That's
okay.
What messed me up. So what we have adopted now is state law. I shouldn't speak for the chief, but he likes to conform to state law on this stuff because it makes it easier to follow one set of law.
So if we were willing to just change the amendment to say, in accordance, should the state change the hours, would that make it cleaner for you later, or you tell me?
Times as prescribed under state law, under the RCW.
Is that cleaner?
That would be easier for me.
With it. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you just need us all to nod and say the amendment will be that way?
Any objection to the modifying that?
No.
Okay, we're going to vote on the amendment. All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries 6-1 with Councilperson Olson voting no. On the main motion, the main amended motion, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries 6-1 with Councilperson Olson. The only thing we can say is the statement of the evening is that this only works and it's only effective if a large percentage of our population wants to try to respect their neighbors and follow the law. That's the statement we need to carry forward.
Yep.
We hope.
Yes.
We
hope. Be good neighbors, please.
So we can all hope.
An ordinance comes back to us to vote on.
Yeah. Correct.
And can we maybe do like a flyer or something prior to the 4th of July when the band, to remind people that only the fireworks
and
they buy
remember,
here in the city
we
are
we will have a very robust.
Remember, this is not next summer. This is the summer after.
Yeah.
So next summer is going to be horrendous.
Next summer is
going to be a week of madness.
Okay, moving on to mayor reports. Okay, this weekend, this Saturday, is Festivus Patrias. So no parade this year, but down in the park, entertainment. Great food if you're looking for some good food, some good entertainment. Lots of entertainment, so that's this Saturday. Saturday the 13th, busy day for you people that like to volunteer and do things in Ferndale. It's Saturday the 13th is Art in the Park and Sunday. And then Saturday the 13th is also the BMX Bike Park Work Party starting at 9 a.m. at the BMX Bike Park. And we'd love to have you because if we get a lot of people, we can pick a lot of rocks, clean a lot of things and make that space look better. It's getting a lot of work.
Throw them all over the fence into somebody's... I mean.
And it would be just in time to get all cleaned up for their first scheduled championship event on the 20th. So it'll be nice to get that spruced up because they're actually predicting people from out of town, so it'd be nice to have a nice park that looks good. So rock picking, and then you can go look at some art all in the same day.
All in the same day.
Picking rocks, and then maybe you can take the rocks over and make something artwork out of it. Thursday the 11th, I'm sure I'm going to steal Mark's thunder because I know you want to spend the time at City Hall at 10 a.m. The auditor will do their exit conference. Love to have you all there because it's a very exciting event.
That's noticed as a public meeting.
Thursday the 11th at 10 a.m. Don't be making a joke. It's a very exciting event. Attended by many. We should probably have popcorn. It's so exciting. Okay, council reports. Councilperson Goodrich.
Three things. Two of them are kind of tied. Well, they're all kind of tied to Pioneer Park. One is the follow-up on the Fiesta Patrias. There will be some cabins, maybe some cabins open to tour. We've left it up to the cabin leads whether or not they're going to open up their cabins or not during that time, and it would be like from 1 to 4 only. And we're going to have some extra tour guides on for people that want to take a tour. We'll have there'll be two tour guides there instead of just one. That way the store can stay open while somebody's out doing tours.
So they're still paid tours?
Huh? There'll be paid tours, but then there'll also be some additional cabins beside the three that are normally open. An issue has come up in the park, and I don't know. I think this will probably be for a committee to discuss, but it's clean up after people rent the park. We've had two incidences in the park. We had a wedding where they used silk flowers, and silk flowers were all over the place. They left them. They walked off and left them. Then the wind came and blew them, and then the parks guys came and mowed them. So now they're shredded.
It's beautiful.
Silk flower petals.
It looks like it's
The question that came up was that I know when somebody rents the Tillicum House, there's a Heritage Society person that's responsible for it. They take a security deposit. If the place has left the mess, then they don't get the security deposit back, and the people that clean the Tillicum House get it. The question came up is in regards to, like, this happened with the barn. Do we do that with the city? Who's responsible for the cleanup of that? So that's why I didn't know if it's something we need to put in our rental policies or whatever, so that doesn't happen. Because they were still blowing all over the park.
We will be adding a substantial fee for that.
The other thing is the Lummi fire pit from Old Settlers is still there.
I've sent a couple of emails and haven't gotten a reply.
So, again, that's another thing where we allowed something to happen, and, you know, what is the follow-through recourse?
Old Settlers cleans it up.
For it.
Who?
Old Settlers.
Why should Old Settlers?
Old Settlers event.
They were allowed in with the stipulation that they would put it back to normal. So,
who's responsible for enforcing that?
Now what Old Settlers, the hammer Old Settlers has, is to go in there and restore it and say, sorry, Lenny, you can't come back.
So I just wanted to let them know.
I don't know what they're going to do, but I mean, that would be my position.
And the last day for tours of the park is September 14th. And it'll be closing for the winter.
Will you be open during Art in the Park? People will be able to take tours of the cabin.
Yeah. If they want to take a tour, there'll be tour guides there for Art in the Park. But as of last year, the Art in the Park was over here, and all the people kind of stayed there, and they really didn't.
They're going to be in the barn this year, so people will be walking through.
Okay.
Councilperson Watson?
Yes, the Technology Alliance Group Northwest is going to be having a scholarship fundraiser at Fox Berry Farm this Sunday. Wendy and I will be there launching rockets, all kinds of fun things to do with the kids, beyond Lego robotics, get to play in the tractor. There's a lot of fun stuff.
In the tractor or on the tractor?
On the tractor.
Okay.
Well, that's more important than the rockets, huh? Probably the
tractor. That sounds like more than a life.
It's Sunday at 11:30 to 3 at Fox Berry Farm, and it's a fundraiser for the Technology Alliance Group. They give... Western University, Bellingham Tech, and Whatcom Community College, as well as the Northwest Indian College. They give scholarships. $35 per family.
Councilor Singer.
Burning objects, as long as they're in the county.
Hey, it's not my house.
There's no fireworks ban.
Two things. Saturday, the 6th. There is a oyster festival at Bellwood Acres. And it's very interesting because they call it an oyster festival, but what it really is a wastewater symposium. But they figured if they call it a wastewater symposium, nobody would show up. But there's going to be several speakers from the county and the state there talking about wastewater and wastewater survey treatment and stuff like that. I don't know whether Wendy's aware of it or not.
It's Clean Water Week, and it's related to stormwater, not wastewater. So it's different, a little bit different. But yeah, it's part of Clean Water. Wendy is no longer part of that group, but I've been working with them to
okay.
sign into on I-5.
And then on Sunday, the 7th, there is an adult baseball tournament down at the Conoco Complex. And if anyone's interested, the Ferndale American Legion is putting on a pancake breakfast from 7:30 to 11.
Hmm. On Sunday. Just Sunday,
Sunday
only.
Okay.
This Sunday.
This Sunday. The 7th.
Mm-hmm. This Sunday.
When's the next community meal?
13th. And it's a pizza party.
Okay. Any other council reports?
Just a question as to, did somebody forget to pick up a porta potty out here?
Apparently so.
Yes, I have contacted them.
Little different.
How do they open the road for a whole day? I don't know. I mean,
new people were working out some kinks about the festival.
Oh, okay.
But the hot dog stand went unbelievably well.
Thanks to the people who did double shifts.
Thanks to the bald guy that worked for 6 hours. Yeah.
Oh my God.
I totally enjoyed it.
My feet. You still smell a little.
Okay. Department reports. Finance director.
Nothing.
City manager.
Nothing.
Community development director left.
No, he had a job interview.
Lame excuse. He had to drive somewhere. We
he had a job interview.
What is it?
Okay. Not funny. Clerk. Please.
When's our new public works director coming on?
Oh, I'm sorry. The Seahawks play Thursday against the Packers.
The 11th.
11.
5:30 p.m.
Home game.
It's a home
right.
game.
I've got it killing me. Okay, we will now be entering executive session pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection G, and RCW 42.30.140, subsection 4A. We estimate the meeting will last approximately 60 minutes, and then we'll reconvene an open public meeting. No action will be taken after the executive session.
60 minutes. You know we can't leave.
My meeting, I get to say.
Regular session.
Move adjourned.
Second.
All favor signify.
Aye.
We are adjourned.